The Ghost Goal Podcast.
While there weren't any upsets of note in the Premier League's opening weekend, there were closely contested matches and late scares up and down the league as Manchester United limped to a 1-0 win over Wolves Monday night, and Arsenal allowed Nottingham Forest a late lifeline at the Emirates before eventually winning 2-1. Meanwhile, a few of last year's top performers in Manchester City, Newcastle, and Brighton were the few who surged to big victories, and the first clash of, major air quotes here, Titans didn't disappoint either as Chelsea and Liverpool played out to an eventful 1-1 draw at the Bridge. I'm Alex, here with Javier. Welcome to the Ghost Goal Podcast, episode 418. And in my books, Javier, this is the first real episode of the season, because we're doing our recaps. We've got the, obviously, like I just mentioned, the first week of Premier League games to talk about. Let's stop this previewing business, this prediction business. That's not what we're good at. We're here to react. First of all, Javier, how are you doing?
Doing well.
Enjoy that scare on Saturday morning?
Yeah, I mean, it was everything that I love about Arsenal in a game, so I can't have asked for more. Other than Yuri and Timber getting injured, that really sucks. Didn't want that.
Yeah. Welcome to the club.
Yeah, he might
be
out
star for new signings,
yeah, four,
getting
five,
injured
six
for the
months,
whole first
so
half of the season.
We'll see.
Well, let's pick it up a little bit. We can mention Arsenal a little bit later on, because that was an interesting game to look back on. But I think it's fair to say the big game of this weekend, the opening weekend, did not disappoint. And that was Chelsea's 1-1 draw against Liverpool at Stamford Bridge on Sunday afternoon.
I think
London.
We should caveat that. The first half didn't disappoint. The second half was a total snooze fest.
Hey, as a Chelsea fan, and with the number of chances we created, I was enjoying the second half. I could imagine neutrals and Liverpool fans may not have enjoyed it. But it overall just kind of leads to a feeling that I think we kind of anticipated in our previews, but it was nice to finally realize it in an actual meaningful game. Just being pleasantly surprised with how decent and promising this Chelsea team looks. I know it's only really been one season of terrible football in a bad place in the league table, but it's felt like way longer just because we had higher expectations for previous teams and they'd disappointed in those expectations as well. This new team, you felt in the first 30 minutes when Liverpool had much the better of the play, scored their goal, probably could have had a second, but it was just barely offside when Salah thought he put them up 2-0. But after that,
Salah
first,
also hit the crossbar.
Minutes, right, he did. Yeah, I almost forgot
they
that.
They tore you to shreds in those first 30 minutes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying it seemed like it could have been, kind of a letdown to start the season. But once that second goal was overturned, you could feel it breathe new life into the team. And it kind of smacked them in the face that we're going to get embarrassed here in the first game of the season at home by, a good Liverpool team, but not one that I think anyone thinks is going to challenge for the league title this season. They all decided to wake up, and players that had started out having terrible first 30 minutes all of a sudden put in man of the match performances. Enzo Fernandez was the actual man of the match, and
yeah, he was all over the place. I mean, he wasn't terrible,
but he all of a sudden sprang into life. Conor Gallagher had given the ball away too many times in the first 30 minutes playing as the most deep defensive midfielder, and he sprang into life and just became a tackling
almost
machine.
Didn't put a foot wrong the rest of the game as soon as you guys scored the goal.
And the other one I want to bring up is Levi Colwill, who was getting rinsed by Salah for the first, 20 to 30 minutes. Salah played that assist to Diaz right past Colwill, and De Zassi, who made a surprise debut, didn't track Diaz well enough for that goal. But both Colwill and De Zassi turned in two of the best players on the field after that. De Zassi scored the equalizer and was just solid all around defensively. So
I was impressed with him, having never really seen him play for Chelsea.
Who, De Zassi?
De Zassi, yeah. I was very impressed with his composure.
Same.
Just his positioning. I'm sure learning from someone like Thiago Silva, who's never really been the quickest player in the world, but it's just his positioning in the back line to cut out balls is incredible. And De Zassi already seems to be pretty high level at that type of game, which if you don't have pace, that's what you got to really be good at. And, Chelsea haven't... I mean,
I don't think that he doesn't have pace.
No, I'm sure he's a big lad. I'm sure he's fast enough. But I'm saying, like, if you're not super fast, you know, someone like John Terry, still, you know, probably the best defender that the Premier League's ever had, wasn't the quickest player. So you don't have to be super quick as a center back to be an amazing center back. So I was pleasantly surprised by his composure, strength on the ball, and just his overall ability. As you know, compared to other top players on the field, really. So, like you said, you know, I thought they were one of the better players on the field from a Chelsea point of view. I thought there were bright spots for Liverpool too. You know, I first of all, the first 30 minutes were excellent from Liverpool. They could have been 2-3-0 up. It's a completely different game if they take their chances in those first 30 minutes. And then, you know, I thought Chelsea grew into the game, especially after, like you said, the second goal got overturned. Chelsea equalized maybe 5 minutes later, just like it always happens in football. You know, you were about to go up 2-0 and suddenly it's 1-1. I mean, it's just like such a gutter punch. It almost feels like you're losing at that point, even though it's just a draw.
A gut punch, even?
Gut punch, yes. Gutter punch, Alex. It's the move.
What would be a gutter punch? What's that?
It's a punch to the gut.
A gutter punch?
Yes.
It's like punching some guy who's trying to clear his gutters out? Whatever, I'll leave it there.
No, but back to Liverpool. I mean, I thought Diaz was really good. I actually really like Szoboszlai. I thought he bossed it in the midfield for a good 60 minutes in that game, even after the rest of the team wasn't performing as well. I thought he was still trying to create on the ball, show for it, and was generally good, making good decisions on the ball. And even McAllister was playing in that deep lying six role, which is not typically where he played, but he did play next to Caicedo at Brighton. But he was typically the one that was given the license to go forward, and Caicedo would stay back and defend. In this scenario, he was the one who was basically the lone defender for you know, in the midfield for Liverpool, and he still did a good job there.
With Trent pushing up into that deep midfield role we talked about. And Trent, I have to say, as a player that, you know, the first thing that gets brought up, well, I guess the second thing that gets brought up after how good he is going forward is how terrible he's been defensively so far in his career. Even in just that one game I watched, like his defensive performance, you can tell it really means something to him to improve that part of his game. He's now like the vice captain of Liverpool, I think, behind Van Dijk, and I'm guessing they're, you know, preparing him to become the captain eventually when Van Dijk leaves. He doesn't want to, you know, have that bad defensive moniker stuck to him for the rest of his career. Like, can only score free kicks and bangers, doesn't really defend that much. His improvement will help them a lot in that defensive midfield role. Much like also a signing will as well. You have to say they need to make a signing.
Well, I was about to say, and then in the second half, you could see that, you know, the legs were kind of gone from that Liverpool team. They weren't pressing nearly as much. They started sitting back and just allowing Chelsea to have the ball.
65% possession.
Yeah, it was
Chelsea
impressive.
Had in the game.
It was impressive.
To 35. But again, I'm not even saying Chelsea forced that and imposed their will on them. We did a good job of that. But I think there's a good part to play in, you know, Liverpool's early season fitness not being at the level it really needs to be at. And maybe a little bit of a recognition that they are a bit light in midfield defensively. And if they open themselves up, they're going to concede more.
I mean, the players that they were bringing on, Harvey Elliott, I mean, they're not bad players. They're, you know, academy players, but it wasn't the difference. Darwin Nunez, he did look like he could make a difference when he came on. You know, he was a little bit of a bright spark, but Liverpool definitely need more depth in midfield. They don't have, you know, if they'd been up 2-1 or something, I don't know who they could have really brought on to shore up the game more. It didn't feel like they had someone on the bench to do something like that. They definitely need another defensive midfielder, and then maybe another depth, like midfield signing as well, or like defensive signing even, because it didn't feel like they had just another player or a couple other players that could make a difference. You now that there's five substitutes, I feel like you have to have five impactful players off the bench to fully win a game. Yeah. And to like impact, especially now that games are going to go into like the 90, you know, 99th, 100th, 110th minute with these 8, 9, 10 minutes of extra time. You know, you got to have fresh legs on the pitch at the end of the game, and your substitutions are going to become even more important. I think you're going to start seeing managers more and more not make a substitution in the 60th minute, maybe wait till the 70th, 72nd, 73rd minute, and substitutions are going to come later because there's still going to be 30 minutes left after that player comes on.
Yeah, and it kind of ties into what you know been going around in the news, mainly you know the transfer news that Moises Caicedo has signed with Chelsea, and that Romeo Lavia, the Southampton midfielder, defensive midfielder, is expected to sign with Chelsea today as well. Lavia especially was a major target of
Liverpool's trying to bring down the price.
This is going somewhere, Javier. They tried to get Caicedo, thought they had him, and then Caicedo told them he wanted to sign for Chelsea. So they've struck out twice with, you know, their main target in Lavia and then the seemingly backup target in Caicedo. Both going to the same like direct rival of theirs. Instead of being the Chelsea fan that trolls Liverpool fans for, you know, thinking they had it over on us in the transfer window, I'm here to offer solutions. And the main player I think they need to sign as the solution to their defensive midfield problems is Kefren Turam, who not many people will know about, but I think any of us who have been, you know, plugged into transfer rumors.
Look at for, Alex, you know, selling his garbage after he's taken the two prime fixtures out. He's like, I have my rag doll here. No one's ever heard of this rag doll, but it's
you've
amazing.
You never heard of Kefren Turam? Javier, let me tell you about
him. Alex, we don't have time for this shit. We don't have time for this shit. No, we have to talk about the Caicedo and Lavia more. No, you're just making up. You're just going into theory world. This is bullshit. I don't want to hear about this. If the player actually comes in and happens, then we can talk about it. But you guys gazomp them. I'm going to be the troll. You don't have to be the troll, Alex. They came in and they tried to big dick you down. And Chelsea went and said, you guys are going to try to say that you have more money than us? Never going to happen. And, I mean, let's face it. There's no way.
Javier proceeded to go on a 6-minute rant about how Chelsea are the devil. We've never heard this one before. So, just kidding. Of course we have. So in order to keep this episode as close to a tight 40 minutes as we usually try to go, I did have to cut a large chunk of Javier's rant, but I've left in the beginning of it, as you just heard, and you'll hear the tail end of it, and you'll get the gist of it from that.
5 hours later.
For like a bigger talent. Anyway, that was my... There's a lot. I think Caicedo's going to be amazing for you guys. Generational talent. I mean, is he worth 150 million? Probably not. Do Chelsea fans care? No, and you shouldn't. I mean, honestly, it's not your money. Doesn't really matter. I'd be thrilled as shit if I was a Chelsea fan and we got Moises Caicedo, because he's going to be as good as Enzo Fernandez was. Now you have Caicedo next to him. It's just bullshit, Alex. Can you tell I'm salty about it?
Kefren Turam is a good player that Liverpool could sign for their defensive midfield spot. I'm serious. I'm not joking. He's been linked with Manchester United. He's been linked with PSG. He's playing at Nice for the last couple of years. He's a solid unit of a player at 6'4", who's been playing under 21 level for France. And honestly, I was very impressed with him at the under 21 Euros that just happened this past summer. There are deals to be had in this market, and I know it's going to feel terrible for Liverpool fans to miss out on the main two targets. That definitely sucks. But there are still deals that can be found. And frankly, you know my position on Lavia. I was happy with Caicedo to have him be our starting defensive midfielder. Lavia, I would have preferred Chelsea had just left that one alone and entrusted Conor Gallagher to reach his potential. So if it ends up with Gallagher being sold, which it almost, you know, definitely will be, then it's going to be bittersweet for me. But yeah, I'm excited about these two young, promising players that are going to fill a void that N'Golo Kante has left for the last couple of years with his injuries. Now we have two players that, you know, play a similar style of very aggressive, hard-tackling, space-eating midfielder that Kante, like, perfected. And hopefully they can realize that potential. But I'll be sad to see Gallagher go if it does end up that way. All right, Javier, let me throw you a bone. Let's talk about the Arsenal-Nottingham Forest game now, because it looked like it was going to be a nice, easy walk in the park for Arsenal. 2-0 up in the first half, probably should have been more, cruising to victory, and then all of a sudden Anthony Elanga and Taiwo Awoniyi come off the bench and score a lightning counterattack that makes the last 10 minutes a little bit scary there for Arsenal. But you got the win anyway. Tell me, what were your thoughts of, you know, the new look Arsenal with all these new signings? And try not to dwell on the timber news at all, you know. You're still bright spots for Arsenal, right?
Yeah. No, I was pleasantly surprised that We started all three of the new signings this summer. Brio is official now, but he was in the stadium, but he we didn't register him in time to get on the bench. But yeah, very, very happy, I guess. I wanted the clean sheets. I think Nottingham Forest weren't at the level of that they were at the end of last season, but I think you saw flashes of it. I think that they're still a good side and that they're going to, you know, when Awoniyi and Elanga came on, they gave us a lot more trouble. I think up till that point, they basically had one chance that was just an error from the back line from a header that came off of a clearance. And Brendan Johnson just put it wide, and he was one-on-one with Ramsdale. Probably should have scored. It would have been 1-0. It would have changed the game. But shortly after that, Nketiah scored. Very, very happy with that. You know, Nketiah being our striker coming in for the injured Jesus and scoring in his first game of the season, you know, getting us off the mark. Can't be happier for that. And that Martinelli assist, I mean, that was pretty ridiculous.
Brazilian
and ridiculous.
the most Brazilian assist of all time, a back heel flick through two defenders. Just basically gambling, like, yeah, let me do this. They will never guess it, and hopefully it gets through. And it did, which, you know, you need to take a risk to get the reward sometimes. But, I mean, the more impressive goal, I think, is Saka. Just, you know, like, he's probably done millions of times in training on Matt Turner, the new Nottingham Forest goalkeeper, spent last year as Arsenal's backup. Just went and said, you're going to try and push me to the ground? Screw you, I'm putting this top left corner, and just blasted it past Turner. To see Saka get off like to a scoring start to the season, I think Arsenal fans need to enjoy him like while you have him. I'm not saying he's going anywhere, but you know, he's still a very young, supremely talented player.
He just shrugged off the player that was fouling him and was right. Like, get the fuck off me, and just rips it top corner. Also, the fact that Saliba, that came off of a corner, Saliba actually like ran back, tackled, stopped a counterattack, picked up the ball, did like a give and go in the corner there to start that play, and ended up getting the assist. It wasn't like because of his pass that the assist happened, but it was because he was still, you know, he's still that good of a player that he's not like brain dead offensively, and just he's good everywhere on the pitch. I mean, the guys, Saliba was phenomenal in this game. I can't praise him enough. He was back to, you know, his old self, and just the way that we look with him in the side is completely different to the Arsenal that you saw for the last, you know, 4 months of the end of last season after Saliba got hurt. It just, he makes such a huge difference in the side. He was our biggest signing this summer. Like, hands down, like, I don't know if we've talked about it. I don't remember us really talking too much about it on the pod. Did
about
we?
His new contract?
Yeah.
No, we haven't talked about it.
Yeah, because
he's a new contract.
Yeah, he re-signed a 5-year deal. And this, you know, going into this was, I believe, the last year of his contract. He had 2 years left, so he was going to have 1 year left after this. But, yeah, it's just very, very happy to have re-signed him. And I think the biggest enigma that we all, I'm sure, are all want to hear me talk about or get your opinions to, Alex, is Kai Havertz. You know,
literally read my mind.
His start in the team. I'm not going to say I was disappointed, because I thought that he did the things that Arteta wanted him to do in that role well, which was he won possession back for us. I think the exact figure was 8 times, but he was going in, tackling, you know, getting interceptions, covering for the left back when the left back was going forward. You know, he was doing things that Xhaka was doing in the role, which was great to see, because he was adapting to that role. And then offensively, you know, he was decent on the ball. You know, he always made good decisions, but he wasn't super effective. You know, there were times where he was a little bit slow on the ball, as opposed to the rest of the team was a little bit quicker in their movements. And I think it's going to take time for Kai to get that like rhythm of Arsenal down. I don't think he has that rhythm yet. He still has that Chelsea rhythm, and it's just,
well, that's the thing I want to call you on there, because the second thing that Kai Havertz was criticized for most at Chelsea during his time there, after, you know, missing chances, was just the pace at which he, you know, made decisions. He's there are some players like Andrea Pirlo is the one I always point to when I say this in a positive light. There are some players who just look like they have all the time in the world when they're on the ball. Like, even if someone tries to rush them into a decision, it doesn't matter, because they have such a good touch and feel and understanding of the space around them that it looks like they're taking their time even when they're under pressure. Kai Havertz has the capability and the potential to play like that. But at Chelsea, we wanted, especially under Tuchel, who, you know, he probably played his best football under, Tuchel was constantly trying to get the team to play at a higher tempo. And it felt like with certain players, mainly with Kai Havertz, that the ball just went into a black hole. Like, he had the capability and the talent to, you know, pull off the, you know, just make the basic extra pass in a timely fashion so we could keep the defense under, under pressure. But he would just take an extra touch, allow his teammates run to develop a little bit too long until they were offside. You're right. He needs to pick up and improve in that way. But I don't think that's the Chelsea problem. That was a problem we were trying to solve at Chelsea, and we couldn't do it. Maybe Arteta has better luck. But I don't think it's bad that he didn't, you know, like, score an assist immediately in his first game. He wasn't a liability. He didn't
no,
just didn't
I was
really
gonna say
out.
He looked fine. He didn't stand out. But he didn't look like he was out of place either. So, you know, probably 6 out of 10 performance from him, but I don't think that's terrible.
I'd go 5.
Sure. Again, but I don't think that's terrible. You know, I don't think for the first time playing in a team in a role that you're not used to playing, I think he's going to improve. That's probably going to be one of his worst performances in that role. You know, I think he's going to have many, many better games than that. And there was definitely a few times that I could see when Bukayo Saka would take the defender to the byline and cut it back, that there's going to be a lot of space left on the opposition on the top of the box. And Kai Havertz is going to be in that space this season. And there's going to be many, many times where, you know, on one side, Odegaard hits it with his left foot, and on the other side, it's going to be, you know, Kai Havertz swinging it with his right. So we're going to need goals from him in that position and those late runs into the box. And he's going to get a lot of chances this season. You know, I know that that's going to happen from just immediately from the play. The other really, really interesting thing that we saw in this game, Alex, was the kind of like three at the back playing, you know, a right center back and left center back, and then not really playing wing backs at all, just playing Saka and Martinelli as wingers, and playing like a two pivot in midfield with Rice and Partey, and playing Odegaard as like the lone roaming midfielder who can kind of do whatever he wants. What did you think of that, Alex? You know,
that's the lineup that we thought, right?
Kind of giving Kai and Odegaard,
shaped up.
Giving Kai and Odegaard
shaped out like that. Yeah, he shaped out like that last year for Arsenal, and eventually City were the ones who took that and basically perfected it. I expect it to remain basically the same way. It may be listed as like a 4-3-3 in the future by whatever, you know, NBC or Sky or whoever's like listing the lineups. They may make it more basic than it actually is, but it's a 3-2-4-1 with, you know, two attacking midfielders and two wingers making up those four just behind the striker. It's Nketiah right now, but that position will improve when Jesus is healthy and comes back. It's just going to be down to how quickly Zinchenko can come back and whether he wins his spot back in that midfield, which I think he should. And all of a sudden, maybe like Partey is the one who is, you know, on the bench a little bit more often. You guys have plenty of options to play within that. As soon as those key players like Zinchenko and Jesus get healthy, you'll see way better performances than this for Arsenal. So I wouldn't be too concerned that it was a little iffy at the end there. I feel like we need to get to one of these, you know, big wins that teams like Newcastle, Man City, and Brighton had this week.
Well,
which one
say,
of these
the
5-1
from Newcastle, it was super impressive. The energy that they had, you know, the play on the ball, just defensive, the energy. It was everything that we saw last season. It's they haven't skipped a beat, and then they've added Sandro Tonali, who, to me, I was surprised at how attacking he was. He had like a few shots on target. He scored a goal. You know, I thought he was more of like a holding midfielder. It kind of looks like he's not really a holding midfielder. He's going to be getting, you know, attacking chances, and just surprised that they're going to be at another level now with him. But I thought that the game was definitely kind of ruined by the Tyrone Mings injury. I thought that before that,
yeah,
you know, it was much more of an even game. So once that happened, it kind of just floodgates opened for Newcastle, and they ran away with it. So congratulations to them. Thought it was a great win for them. Great way to open the season. I don't think the problems with Newcastle are going to come till, you know, they get a few games into Europe and they get a few injuries, because they were really injury free last season. They didn't have Europe to contend with. I want to see if they can keep that up this year. You know, how if that energy can stay throughout the whole season. I think we're going to see it for the first couple of months. They're going to get a lot of wins and they're going to look really good.
Yeah.
But I want to.
Energy
I think
is
it
the
remain,
right word
yeah,
there.
I think it remains to be seen if that energy can stay throughout the whole season.
They play with such high energy and intensity just in general. It's not the same style, but do you remember like the early years when under Klopp, when Liverpool were first, you know, breaking through as a top four, regular top four contender and eventual league champion? It felt like when you were playing them at times that they would just suffocate opponents when their opponents had the ball. Like within seconds, it felt like, oh my God, just hoof it down the field. We can't give it away to them here. Newcastle, especially at home, at St. James's Park, with the energy of that crowd like boosting them, it's like a completely different team. So, yeah, injuries are my main concern for them as well. And once the fixtures start piling up, whether it's Isaac or Wilson, I mentioned this in the previews, when those players are both healthy, you saw it on the Saturday. Isaac got an impressive brace and Wilson came on and scored at the end. And then even another new signing in Harvey Barnes got a goal right at the end. So they look like they're trending in the right direction, but only time will tell for now. I feel like we do have to mention Manchester City, even though they beat a promoted team. They opened the league campaign on Friday night with a very convincing 3-0 win away at Burnley, the champions of the championship, managed by former Manchester City legend Vincent Kompany. There were positives for Burnley, where for much of the or big portions of the first half, after they went behind in the third minute, Burnley were trying to press Manchester City high, had some success sometimes, forced, you know, a couple of iffy passes from like Ederson and other players in the back line. But just, you know, you can tell they've been even out of the competition just for one season with a whole new team. It makes a difference, like trying to get back up to that level where you're used to playing against teams that can just pick apart your press. Obviously, no one will do it really as well as Manchester City will, so kind of unlucky for Burnley there. But I thought they left a good account of themselves for the opening day, even though they lost 3-0.
Yeah, so did I.
And Manchester City, they just keep on Manchester City.
Haaland scoring with his first touch of the season, come on. Just...
Yeah, and then even De Bruyne
going out injured after
20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then Kovacic comes on. I was just texting you and everyone else like, this is unfair.
Right.
This is unfair.
But the one thing that I'll say about City is that like you looked at their bench, though, and if they get one or two more injuries, like De Bruyne's out for a few months, you could see there being, you know, a little bit of maybe a dip in form. You know, I'm not saying that that's going to happen.
Okay, give me a player who, if they get injured, it would be a threat. Just one. Just one. And let's play this out.
All right. Well, I'm not going to say Haaland because that's too obvious.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, do you want me to? Because I could still do it.
I mean, Alvarez is not like he's already playing Haaland right now.
I'm saying if Haaland goes out injured, Alvarez would just take his place and would become, you know, a 20 goal a season scorer. Say like the worst thing happened to Haaland, tore his ACL, he's out the rest of the season, they're not going to be able to count on him. I would still stick by City to win the league, even without Haaland, because Alvarez, I think, is that good. And if he's just given the keys to the Lamborghini, he could get that thing up to fucking 200 miles an hour, like easily. So give me another one. Give me someone except Haaland who, if they got
Rodri,
injured,
Alex.
Would be... Rodri, okay, so now we have Stones and Kovacic at the base of midfield. Or
I don't know if that's not as good. It's not as
well,
good.
Well, Stones will do the defensive midfield part, and Kovacic will do the ball progressing part. Then in front of them, you still have, you know, Grealish, Bernardo Silva, if they could play as the two center attacking midfield options, if we're assuming De Bruyne is also out. Then you can have Foden on the right wing, left wing. Who am I forgetting? They're gonna sign Jeremy Doku, sure.
Cole Palmer, Alex.
Cole Palmer on the right wing and Foden on the left wing. Have you seen Cole Palmer?
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
He's pretty damn good.
He's really good. He's super good. Yeah. No, I know, Alex. I'm sure they'll be fine.
They're still going to
be
fine because there's also 3 weeks left in the transfer window. So don't expect them to go, you know, these next 3 weeks without signing anyone. They're going to go out there and get probably two players that will just make you think like, oh, this is unfair. Even if it's Paqueta for 70 million, they'll turn him into an absolute star. He'll be starting in midfield for Brazil.
Alex, you know who you forgot? You forgot the absolute god, Calvin Phillips. Yes, Alex.
Well, we still need to see if he can stay healthy, because he's been out for like 3 years at this point. But yeah, City keep on cruising to start the season. Do you want to jump over to Brentford-Tottenham? Probably the, you know, most high-scoring even game of the week. We've got Ange Postecoglou making his managerial debut.
Good riddance. Fuck off, Harry Kane.
Yeah, Harry Kane's officially gone to Bayern for 100
no
million euros.
No more 14 goals in the North London derby anymore. Goodbye.
What did you make of Richarlison trying to make up for Harry Kane's, you know, prolonged
he's
absence?
Just not,
you know, final
he's
absence.
Just not the same player. I mean, it's going to take Tottenham a long time to get to the point where they can get over the loss of somebody like a Harry Kane. But I think that Postecoglou showed in this game that he still has this team, you know, playing in a different manner than they played before. They're more offensive minded. You know, even their wingbacks get forward. They're, you know, Romero scored. I know he went off injured though, which was a pretty big blow.
He
for
went
them.
Off with a concussion. He headed Mbeumo, I think, earlier in the half. Came back on, scored that go ahead 1-0 goal. And then the Tottenham physios just said he didn't look right, because he had obviously headed that goal in after suffering a concussion, which isn't a great look. So they advised Postecoglou to take him off. And Romero was like livid when it happened, because he thought he could just continue with a concussion. So it's not going to be anything too long term, I don't think. Maybe one game out, but it's good to see that they at least like had the information and acted on it, so that, you know, we don't have players getting CTE in football like it's, you know, highly rumored that they could be developing.
And then, you know, Brentford as well. Brentford, I thought, also showed kind of like what they're going to be about. You know, they still got goals from Mbeumo and Wissa, and, you know, they're still an attacking, high energy, you know, Premier League level team. You know, is Tony coming back in January? Then I think they're going to be fine, because I think they'll pick up enough wins between now and January that they, you know, won't really be flirting with relegation. And then, you know, once they get Tony back, they'll probably be firmly mid-table. But for Tottenham, they're going to have to make signings now with the Kane money. I'm sure they're going to buy a couple of two or three players. You're not going to replace Harry Kane with one player, so they're going to need two or three players, and I'm sure Tottenham are going to get them. Tottenham are not the type of team to let someone like Harry Kane go and then not replace him.
Do you know what my nightmare scenario for Tottenham is?
They go get Lukaku from you, Alex.
No, that's the dream scenario. Actually, that completely changes. Thank you for bringing that up. I've heard that joked about, but okay, here's what I was going to say, and now that you've mentioned Lukaku, here's how I'll close it out. What I was going to say is my nightmare scenario is that Tottenham come in with like a 50 or 60 million offer for Conor Gallagher, and Chelsea sell him just with the money in their eyes, trying to balance the balance sheet a little bit. What if we add into the Conor Gallagher deal, you buy Conor Gallagher, but you have to take Romelu Lukaku as well.
Oh God, that'd be a great deal for you, Alex.
You get your Kane replacement striker. Don't worry about any of the previous stuff. That's all bullshit. He's reformed. He's a good guy now. He'll bang the goals in for you, and you get Conor Gallagher. I would take that. I love Conor Gallagher. I will, you know, cry when he leaves, regardless of where he goes to. But Tottenham would just be the worst place for him to go. But if we got rid of Lukaku at the same time, that would ease it a little bit. That's not going to happen. That's too crazy of a deal to bring up. But a man can dream. I'm torn, man. I hate Lukaku, but I love Conor Gallagher. I was just bringing up Gallagher because Bissouma came back into midfield for Tottenham, and I think he played with Ollie Skip was the other midfielder.
Yeah, Oliver Skip.
They do have Højbjerg on the bench and played pretty well for them last season, but Skip was playing through most of preseason for Postecoglou. So I think they can upgrade that Oliver Skip position if they got someone like Conor Gallagher in. They should have gone for someone like James Ward-Prowse. You know, he would have been a good option for them before he went to West Ham. There's still major spots other than striker, which obviously needs improving. That still need improving in Tottenham's squad. So we'll see how they develop. But a 2-2 draw away at Brentford, I don't think is the worst result to start your season on. Where do we want to finish at? You know what?
Well, we got to talk Man about United Brighton, Wolves. Alex. Brighton looked great against Luton.
Nah, you want Brighton or do you want Man United?
No, I just wanted to say, you know, they look great. They, you know, João Pedro, their new toy, scored a goal. Adringa, the kid I brought up, got a goal as well in his Premier League debut. Ferguson came on and scored. I mean, they were rocking over there. I know that it was just Luton, but great start to the season for Brighton. And for Fulham as well, I mean, I feel like that 1-0 win over Everton, that's kind of, you know, like a relegation six-pointer almost. If you
they got lucky there. They got real lucky. Everton, I mean, they hit the bar, but Everton hit the bar and had way more chances than Fulham. But yeah, we have to mention Manchester United. I know it wasn't like an eventful game, but they still ended up winning against Wolves earlier today on Monday. Rafael Varane scored the winner in the 76th minute. A very lackadaisical performance by Manchester United, kind of slow out of the blocks for them, especially considering it's at home. Wolves manager, Gary O'Neill.
Gary O'Neill, he had just been in the job for 3 days.
He's only just come into the job. Right. You expected more from Manchester United, and it was kind of a dud of an opening performance, and was, you know, closed out by a clear penalty that VAR just did not give for whatever reason.
Yeah, United got lucky to get a win there. They should have gotten a draw, but I think typical, you know, performance for Manchester United usually to start the season. They had, you know, the only time that I remember United in recent memory starting really well was under Mourinho, but ever since then they've always kind of had a lackadaisical start to the season. You know, even going back, losing the first three games, or last season they lost the first two games. You know, they usually pick it up later on, and I feel like a Ten Hag team maybe needs more than just a few weeks of training to get to full fitness where Ten Hag wants them. So I'm not going to, like, you know, blow any type of panic whistle or anything for United. You know, they won the game. A win's a win. I'd be happy if I was a United fan just that they got the win and you know, not really look back on this as being a significant part of their season, just getting them off the blocks.
Well, is it significant that their next game, which is going to be part of our way too early previews, you know, next Saturday, 12:30 p.m., they're going down to London to face Tottenham, Tottenham's first home game of the season. Not overly impressive themselves, but who would you favor in that game? Manchester United, just because, you know, they finished higher in the table last season and won in the first week? Or do you think there's potential here for, you know, another early season slip-up?
Yeah, you got to give Manchester United the edge in that, because Tottenham, you know, still reeling from losing Kane. I don't anticipate that they're going to be able to score multiple goals on this Manchester United side. I think it might be a low-scoring game. I think they'll try, and they'll get caught on the counterattack. I think a 1-1 draw written all over it.
I'm going to say 2-1 Manchester United, just because Wolves were playing a very low defensive block, and United, you know, under multiple managers, have struggled against those types of teams. There won't be anything like that for a Postecoglou team, especially one that's playing at home. Spurs will be wide open, and there'll be acres of space for, you know, Rashford to run in behind and score. So I think United will turn it around, even though they won their first game of the season. And then the second game we have to mention is later on Saturday. 3 p.m. kickoff on a Saturday is nice. We don't get too many of those, and I think we're going to get more this season. Manchester City versus Newcastle, the first top four clash from two teams that finished in the top four last season. Manchester City are at home, so, you know, Newcastle won't have that raucous crowd behind them. But do we think there's any chance Newcastle could, you know, get any kind of results here early in the season?
I think so. I think earlier in the season last year, they played them to like a 3-3 draw. And I think that they're a lot better of a team.
That was at St. James's Park, though. I think that
was it.
Because they were up 3-1 in that game, and then City came like roaring back. The Trippier free kick that he put top left corner.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's going to be a similar type game. I think there'll be lots of goals in this game, and could see like a 3-2 win for Manchester City, or, you know, another 3-3. I think it's going to be a great game, and I'm super hyped for it. I honestly can't predict the winner in it, and I hope Newcastle win. You know, I'm going to be a whoever is against City fan all season, so Montafuck Newcastle.
All right, well, I think that will do us for this week. Even though the first week of the Premier League has kicked off, I still think if you're considering it, go and join the Go Skull Podcast Fan League, our fantasy Premier League mini league. Even with a week in the books and everyone has already made their team a week ahead of you, It's a long season. There's 37 game weeks left. You can catch up. Trust me, people forget to set their lineup sometimes. It happens. Go to fantasy.premierleague.com, create your team, then go to our Twitter, at Ghost Goal Pod. There's an automatic join link there that you can click on, and you'll just be added to the mini leagues table in the following game week. Javier, thank you for joining me this week. You can follow him on Twitter at JavierRev9. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at ASMoss92. And you can follow the podcast socials at Ghost Goal Pod. Enjoy the games this weekend. And until next time, see you.